We've got two state legislative candidate forums left in our nine-week series, and tonight we feature the 75th Assembly District. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side 75th State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now, before I introduce the candidates, I'll explain what parts of our listening area compose the district. The 75th includes all of Barron County, the southeastern corner of Washburn County, the far eastern portion of Polk County, two towns on the easternmost side of St. Croix County, and the town of New Haven in Dunn County. The larger cities within the district are Rice Lake and Shell Lake. And if I forgot to mention any others, I apologize. Now let's introduce the candidates. First, I'd like to welcome Republican incumbent State Representative Roger Rivard. Representative Rivard is a real estate developer and broker from Rice Lake. He is married and has six children and was elected to the State Assembly in 2010. Roger Rivard, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Now I'd like to welcome Democratic challenger Stephen Smith. Candidate Smith is a small business owner himself from Rice Lake, who is married and has three children. Stephen Smith, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. And I think Shatek and Barron and Cameron.
There's so many others.
Would all say that they're bigger than Shell Lake. So
all
right. Let's not neglect the big cities in Barron County.
Fair enough. Sorry, Barron, and all the other cities mentioned. Also, I want to let the listeners know that we want you to join in this forum as well. Whether you call in with your question or comment or whether you post it on our Westside Facebook page, we would love to hear from those living within the 75th State Assembly District, but we can also take calls from whoever dials in. To be part of the program, call in at 800-228-5615. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We've got three phone lines, and if they fill up and you get a busy signal, keep trying. Otherwise, you can go to Facebook and get your comment on there, and we'll try to get it on the air. So, with that, I want to start with the candidates giving us a little bit of a short bio and the reason for why they're running. I'll start with Democrat Stephen Smith.
Thank you. I live in Shell Lake, and I'm one of the owners of a business in Rice Lake. People that know me well use the words integrity, experience, and values to describe me. 6 weeks after I graduated from high school, my father died. My youngest brother had just finished kindergarten. My mother became a widow with six children, and I became active in our family school bus business. I apologize. I should have turned this cell phone off before
this program started. Please continue.
After, you know, along the way, I earned a degree in accounting from the University in Superior, married my wife of 40 years, Christine, gained 5 years of corporate accounting experience, before returning back to my hometown, Rice Lake, back in active in the family bus business. Eventually, Christine and I became the owners of the bus business, and we sold that in 2006. Then in 2009, we made a difficult choice. We invested our retirement nest egg in the purchase of a longtime Rice Lake business, and we had partners with us that invested their nest egg also. Mm-hmm. And we helped preserve the Rainbow and jobs in our community. And so Rainbow is doing business today, unlike County Market and Kmart on Rice Lake South Side. I'm running for the Assembly because I believe we can do better. I know that every day we're all working hard to provide for our families and to help our communities function. That's the way we do it in northern Wisconsin. And we have leaders in Madison that are quibbling about political points. And it's time we put people in front of party politics, apply common sense, and start working together to fix our problems. It's that simple.
All right, thank you. And Representative Rivard, I'll ask you the same question, short bio, if you would, and why you're looking for a second term.
Okay, thank you very much, Rich. First of all, I'd like to thank WPR and yourself, Rich, for hosting this radio forum. I'd also like to give a special thank you out there to my wife, who I know is listening tonight, and thank her for all of her support and strength through this campaign. Also, I'd like to thank everybody out there that's listening. You know, it's such an important thing for the candidates to actually be able to get their views out instead of a bunch of sound bites and rhetoric, that you know, we can actually sit down here and discuss the different things that are important to the people of the state of Wisconsin, what our views are and what our view on the state laws that we're going to be passing and our platforms and what we're running on. It's really important for the people to hear that. A little bit about myself. I was born in Rice Lake. I'm a lifelong resident of the 75th Assembly District. I've been a businessman for over 40 years in Rice Lake. I'm married to my wife, and we have 6 children. We also have 10 grandchildren. 40-some years ago, I had a little dairy drive-in in Barron, Wisconsin, where you know, Mr. Kallenbach is from, and his sister actually worked for us. But that was back in the early 70s. Prior to that, I worked for my folks at Rivard's Dairy Bar in Rice Lake. And then after that, I had a camper business in Rice Lake, Rivard's Campers, Polaris Dealer, Snowmobiles, Snapper Lawn and Garden Equipment, and Coachman RVs. Did that for about 20-some years. And then back in the late 80s, early 90s, I got my real estate license. And since then, I've been a real estate broker and developer in the Rice Lake area. The last 17 years, I've been with Coldwell Banker. And I've actually retired from that, so I'm no longer in that business. My son took over, and he's the managing broker now.
Okay.
Everybody always asks, why did you run? It was my number one question when I first ran 2 years ago. And my pat answer is because my wife and I have 6 children and 10 grandchildren. You know, when we were asked that question, when we were asked to run for office, I was asked, my wife and I sat down, we had a good long discussion about what should we do, you know. And it always came back to that same thing. We've got to find some way to leave a better place for our children and our grandchildren because, you know, we've had a great life and we want them to have the same opportunities we've had. And the way the state of Wisconsin was going and the way the federal government was going, we just weren't going to be leaving them that, you know. They're all $40,000 in debt. It's amazing the debt that the national government has accumulated and the position that the state of Wisconsin was in at that time. When you look at 10 grandchildren and each one of them is $40,000 in debt, yeah, that's $400,000 and not one of them has a job yet. That's a shame, and we can't leave that. We knew the fiscal situation in the state of Wisconsin was rough. We were one of the worst states. Our job losses were tremendous. Business was stagnant. There's a lot of problems. We had a huge deficit, a $3.6 billion deficit. We owed $58 million to the state of Minnesota for tax reciprocity that was unpaid. We had a $138 million budget hole in our previous budget that had to be repaired because we're a balanced budget state. We owed $200 million to the payment compensation plan plus $33 million. All that had to be fixed in order to get our fiscal house in order, and we did do that. We balanced the budget. We're running a $342 million surplus in the state of Wisconsin. We put $108 million in our rainy day fund this year, and we also put money in the rainy day fund last year. First time in the history of Wisconsin we've done it 2 years in a row. So we've come a long ways, but we've got a lot to do. We've saved $1 billion for the taxpayers of Wisconsin. We've done it through tax reforms, regulatory reforms, and making a better business environment for the people of the state of Wisconsin, and we got to continue with that.
All right. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up first and foremost, and Roger Rivard, you did an interview last December with the Chautauqua Alert that has been making state and national news recently, in which you were quoted as saying, "Some girls rape easy." You've since explained that this was a quote from your father warning you about the risks of having sex while underage. Do you regret making this comment? And if you could talk to a voter one-on-one, what would you say you meant by that?
You know, it is a shame that this has become such a big part of our campaign. I had a very frank discussion with my father 45 years ago about premarital sex, and he was a very devout Catholic man and very religious, and he was giving me advice about, you know, what to do when I was probably 15 years old or so and just starting the dating scene. And he said there's a lot of, you know, in his world there was no such thing as premarital sex. Sex was for marriage only. And he was trying to convey that to me. And he says, if you do go down that road, there's a lot of bad things that can happen. And he did make a quote to me to warn me against that. I did an interview with Anita Zimmerman from the Chautauqua Alert about a year ago. And we talked about different things. And do I regret, you know, repeating the words of my father, which were at that time politically incorrect? Yeah, I do, because it's turned into such a political circus. And it's turned into a smear campaign now. But I did have a frank discussion with Anita about the sexual predator registry, mm-hmm. and the Romeo and Juliet laws. We never talked about there was a case in Chautauqua that was surrounded that community for a while. And we never ever did talk about that because I knew nothing about it. And that never even came up in our conversation. So we had a frank discussion about the sex offender registry and the Romeo and Juliet laws. And I made a quote that my father had told me many years ago about, you know, be abstinence. That's what we were talking about. And then those words were taken out of context and used against me now. A few words are taken out, and you take a couple words out, and you say four words, and then you attribute them to me instead of my father, and you turn it into a political circus, and that's exactly what we've got. And it's really kind of a shame because Anita has even came out and said, you know, she feels terrible about what has happened to her article. I mean, it's her article. Mm-hmm. And she wrote it, and she said that, you know, she talked to me and had a frank discussion. I was an honorable man. She said, it's a shame that this thing has been turned into such a political circus, and it's just absurd. But, you know, it is what it is. I would never say that my father was a horrible man. I just won't do that. He gave me some very good advice and probably something that many, many kids should have.
And now, before I go to Stephen Smith, I want to ask you a follow-up. And because of this comment or because of the controversy surrounding the words that you used, you've lost endorsements from Paul Ryan, Governor Scott Walker, and have been criticized by others in your party. Why do you feel they're distancing themselves?
I would say that, you know, this whole thing was very well choreographed. Steve in the Democratic Party knew this was coming for a long time, and they did a really spectacular job of choreographing it and bringing it out right before, you know, Paul Ryan was to go on his debate the next night. He was going to go on to debate Biden, and of course he was the first one that was approached with it, and because he was attached to Roger Rivard through a fundraiser, he was the first person they attacked, and he basically disavowed me just so he could, you know, save himself politically. And then it went right down the line, and I know everybody was contacted. I've talked to county board chairmen. I've talked to different people that endorsed me, different organizations and groups that endorsed me, and they were all contacted by Steve and his party to disavow me. And it was like a house of cards falling, and they all went. Unfortunately, none of them bothered to check the story out or read the article or talk to me about it. It just they fell like, you know, like I say, a house of cards, and it's unfortunate. It's I guess that's the way politics is nowadays, but it's just how it came down.
Well, now let me go to you, Stephen Smith. You've been quoted recently in the Eau Claire Leader Telegram as saying that this comment is indicative of Roger Rivard's attitude towards women. What do you mean by that?
Well, first, I'd like to say that the victim here is a 14-year-old girl in Chautauqua, mm-hmm. who was sexually assaulted at her high school. And it was not a Romeo and Juliet situation. But Roger's words by themselves, you know, would just be advice from a father. And I can appreciate that. But his vote to do away with equal pay, pay for equal work, and his vote to cut back funding for women's screenings, healthcare screenings, and his vote to cut back sexual assault victim services. And then when it was moved to be reinstated, voting against it a second time. And, you know, the way I'm reading that is this is a vote where somebody that was a victim of sexual assault would have to pay for their own rape kit, rubbing salt into the wounds. And I just don't think that that is very supportive of half the population of our state. And that's why I think that this time his votes matched his quotes.
Roger Rivard.
And I will once again say that this discussion about the case in Chautauqua was never brought up, ever, by myself or by Anita. This was never discussed. It's been used against me. Even the DA in Barron County tried to tie me into that case. It was never the case, and Anita would verify that. Also, the equal pay is a federal law. That has nothing to do with the state of Wisconsin. There was a trial lawyer gift that was given back in the Doyle administration to the trial lawyers that they could sue on the state level for triple damages and extort business people basically by the threat of a lawsuit. Say, okay, you discriminated against me, and as soon as you say that, the business knew that they were up against a triple damages in costs. So many times they would just cave in and give the person, whether it be a disabled person or a handicapped person or a female person, a settlement just to get out from under it because it could be such humongous amounts of money because of triple damages. This backed off that the trial lawyer gift from the Doyle administration. So their equal pay is a federal law. It had nothing to do with equal pay for equal women. The funding removal was for Planned Parenthood. There's some of us that are pro-life, and I believe that Steve would tell you he's pro-life. And when we are paying, taking taxpayers' money and paying for abortions, some of us find that abhorrent. We just do not agree with that. And there's a lot of people that pay taxes that do not want to do that. We cannot force people to pay for something that they abhor. That's not a government position. So when we remove the Planned Parenthood funding, yes, you can tie other things that Planned Parenthood does, but there's other agencies that do the same thing. You can talk to Catholic Charities. You can talk to all kinds of different people about women's screenings and cervical cancer examinations and different things like that. It's not just Planned Parenthood. It's not the only organization that can do that. So to tie these two together, and many of the things that Steve keeps claiming are all, you know, are keep being called by PolitiFact totally untrue, but yet he keeps saying them, you know? And so I guess if you tell a lie enough times, you think it's going to be true, but it doesn't.
I believe that the Hyde Amendment keeps Planned Parenthood from using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions. And these dollars went for preventative screenings.
With that, we're going to take our first break. We've got full phone lines right now, and I'm going to run through some calls when we get back. You're listening to the Westside's 75th State Assembly Candidate Forum with Republican incumbent Roger Brevard of Rice Lake and his Democratic challenger Stephen Smith, also of Rice Lake. We'll hear more from the candidates, and we'll begin taking those calls when we return. Next week, the West Side goes on the road for our final state legislative forum. We'll be at the Durand High School for the 93rd State Assembly Candidate Forum with Warren Petrick, Republican incumbent, and Jeff Smith, the Democratic challenger. So join us for that in person, or you can tune us in on the old talk box to hear from those candidates. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening this hour to the West Side 75th State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. I'm joined by Republican incumbent Roger Brevard of Rice Lake and Democratic challenger Stephen Smith of Rice Lake. We also want to hear from the voters in the 75th and elsewhere. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. And we do have three people on the line. We're going to work through those calls right now. First, we're going to Spooner, and we've got Paul on the line. Paul, thanks for calling in. What is your question or comment?
The question I have is, I have, with the GOP in charge, I feel that we have extremes in charge in Madison, because currently visitors at the Capitol are being arrested for simply recording on their cell phones or even holding a sign as small as like an 8.5 by 11 sign, while people standing next to them with guns are allowed to remain free. The question I have is, where is the threat? And do you feel that the Second Amendment is more important than the First Amendment?
Good question. We'll put that to Roger Brevard, and then we'll get a follow-up from Stephen Smith.
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of controversy down in Madison with what's been going on the last year and a half. And, of course, I've been right there in the building the whole time, so I know what's going on. And it hasn't always been pretty. But we do have rules. We do have rules in the Capitol, and they need to be followed by everyone. You know, it's interesting, you know, during the protests and different things like that, we always had an ability at lunch hour. People can go in and they can reserve the Capitol. They can reserve the rotunda. We had choirs. We had concerts. We had bands come in, high school and college. And it was always a nice place to have lunch. Well, then the protesters basically took it over, which is fine. But the rules are you have to apply for the use of the rotunda during the lunch hour, whatever time you want to. And you have to give 48 hours and you have to get permission so that you don't have conflicting things going on. Well, the protesters felt like they should be able to do it every lunch hour, and sometimes they interfered with the choirs and the thing. We had carolers come in last Christmas, and they interfered with their caroling program. So they tried to enforce these rules. And it was hard to do, you know. And so they had to get a little bit stricter with the rules. That building belongs to everybody. It belongs to everybody. It belongs to the people that work there. It belongs to the taxpayers. It belongs to all the people of the state of Wisconsin. And they have the right to enjoy that facility just like everybody else. So it cannot be taken over by any one group. And unfortunately, that's what happened. As far as there are rules, and there are rules like within the chambers. As far as videotaping, that is the rule. So if you start videotaping while we're in session, you're going to get escorted out. And, of course, people were taking advantage of that, and there's rules about signs and indicating what your preference is by holding a sign up. So when they hold a sign up, they have to be taken out. Those are the rules. Now, if the people of the state of Wisconsin think that the rules should be changed so that while we're in session, it can be a free-for-all and people can scream and holler up from the gallery, or they can hold signs up, or they can do whatever they want, then I guess those rules should be changed. But right now, those are the rules, and everybody should have to abide by the same rules.
All right, Stephen Smith, what are your thoughts on the crackdown, I guess you could call it, with the new captain of the, or the leader of the Capitol Police?
Well, I heard the part of the question was what's more important, the First Amendment or the Second Amendment, and I feel they're equally important. But getting past that, I think it's a doggone shame that if five people went down to Madison right now and either took a Rivard for assembly sign or a Smith for assembly sign and walked through the rotunda with those signs, I'm not talking about the gallery for the, you know, where the legislature meets, they probably would be arrested and fined. And what a more appropriate place to express support for a political candidate than our state capitol. And I think that's infringing on our rights, and everyone suffers as a result. We'll see how the courts play this out, but I think there will be changes coming.
Roger Rivard.
Steve, people are there every day doing exactly what you just said, and they don't get arrested every day. I mean, they're there every day, Steve. Yeah. They have signs, they have banners, they sing songs every noon hour, but they do it with a permit. Okay. Now, if you've got to have a opposing group come in at the same time, you have a free-for-all. They need to get a permit, and if they're going to have a demonstration, you get the permit and go ahead and have your demonstration. It's done every day, and nobody gets arrested.
You got to get the permit in advance, and if you live up in northern Wisconsin, it's pretty hard to go there twice to be there once. And
call it in.
And what's going, the legislature hasn't been in session since the change in the head of the Capitol Police. And, the new guy is definitely not the old guy.
And we're going to go now to Rice Lake, and I'm loving that these calls seem to be coming from the district. That's great. But we do want anyone that's got a question or comment to call in. Now, Rice Lake and Gerald is on the line. Thanks for hanging in there. What's your question or comment, Gerald?
Well, the question I have is for Mr. Smith.
Okay.
He comes across as being a strong proponent of public education, and there's a level of confusion here between what he says and what he and his family did. He chose to send his children to Shattuck in Faribault, Minnesota, for their education instead of having them educated in this district. I'd like for him to address that.
Thank you very much. Stephen Smith.
Yes, both my daughters attended their last 2 years of high school at Shattuck in Faribault, Minnesota.
A private school?
Yes. Okay. And we paid for it ourselves. We were fortunate to have the means to do it. We believe in education. And this is something we could give our children that no one could ever, ever take away from them.
And, since we're on the topic then, I'll start with you, Stephen Smith, and then I'll get to Roger Rivard's comment. But the last budget cut more than $800 million from the state aid portion of funds that go to public K-12 schools. That's not to mention the cuts for higher education, whether it be technical colleges or the UW system. Do you feel, Stephen Smith, that is going to or is hurting the quality of our education that our public schools are able to offer?
Absolutely. When dollars are cut, the choices, the programs that are available for our children to learn from definitely are impacted. There's less choices now. And it wasn't just that money. It was also $300 million that was sent to 123 private voucher schools with no accountability in southeast Wisconsin, 112 in Milwaukee, 11 in Racine. And this is money that was taken from our kids in the 75th district and the rest of Wisconsin and sent. I mean, that was, $300 million for 20,000 students. That's $15,000 per student. I don't think there's a school district in the 75th district that's getting $15,000 per student state aid. And I really feel that, you know, we've modernized the education system for the user, open enrollment. This has put our local school boards in the position of having to market themselves to the local population. And Barron just had a referendum. And if that hadn't passed, they would have had to make some cuts in programs. And when they did that, they probably would have led to open enrollment into surrounding districts, which would have led to less funding, which would have led to more cuts, which would have led to more open enrollment, which, you know, just a vicious circle downwards. We can't do that anymore. The value of a student to the state of Wisconsin should not depend on geography. All students should be funded the same.
All right. Roger Rivard, same question to you. There was a lot of money that the Republican-led state legislature took out of the K-12 public schools.
Yep.
Is that, do you feel that that might hurt the...
First of all, I'd like to respond to the public education versus private education. You know, both Steve and I went to a Catholic school, and I know Steve probably, I think he went to private schools after that. But, you know, I don't have a problem with that. See, you know, the problem with many of the Democrats down in his party, they vilify anything that has to do with anything other than public education. It's got to be public education. We can't put any money towards private education. We can't give vouchers. We can't do charter schools. We can't do this. It's a constant battle. But yet many of them send their kids to public or private schools, you know, because it's what they want, what's best for their child. But everybody else has to be reliant on what they decide is good for their children. We need both. I'm a firm believer in competition. We need both. What makes industry better? Competition. What makes anybody better? Competition. What's make you better at your job? If you know somebody's in the next room that might be a better announcer than you, you might lose your job. So you're going to be better and better if you have competition. There's nothing wrong with competition. We need the public school system. We have a great public school system, especially up in our area. But we have some public school systems that aren't so good, that are horrible, actually. We have Milwaukee Public Schools as a prime example. You talk about the dollars per students, $15,000 approximately per student to educate them, whereas in a public school system with a voucher, it's about $6,400. Now, they can, you know, when you send that $6,400 to the person to send their children to a voucher school or whatever, it's that's $15,000 that doesn't have to be spent on the other end. So it can be a money-saving thing. We need to have better competition for the Milwaukee Public Schools. That's what's going to create a better situation for them. Talk about the $800 million in cuts. Steve, this is not the first time education's ever been cut. Are you aware that the Doyle administration cut public school spending by hundreds of millions of dollars before? There's one difference, though. This time, the school districts, the municipalities, the local townships and villages and counties had the tools to recoup that money. Many of the school districts, by farming out their health insurance premiums, have saved tens of millions of dollars, like $30 million in the state of Wisconsin alone was saved by farming out their insurance. They've got control of many of their employment practices right now and work rules. There's many things that the school districts can take advantage of. Some did and some didn't. Some school districts didn't want to take advantage of it. They signed contracts and boom, off they went. What did those school districts do? They ended up laying off massive amounts of teachers. They had to cut programs. They had to cut education things for their students. Some of the school districts took advantage of them. They had extra funding for more programming, less classroom hours, more teachers. They didn't have to lay anybody off. So they took advantage of those things. So we gave them tools to recoup the money. In the previous administrations, they just cut the hundreds of millions of dollars and figure out how to do it. There's a big difference between those two.
Stephen Smith, I'd like to get a response from you.
Well, I don't see how we can compare $6,400, $6,400 to $15,000 and call it equal. And
it's not.
You know, in private schools, anyone can go to a private school, and I understand not everyone can pay for it, but most of the private schools that I'm aware of do have scholarships, and if you can earn meritoriously academically, the money will be there so you can attend. We have that in our Catholic schools, and I know that the non-Catholic schools have it also.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and we'll go to Dover Township, and we've got Doris on the line. Doris, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I would like to have my question to both candidates, please.
Okay.
You have met with thousands of voters in the 75th district. What are their biggest concerns regarding the directions Wisconsin has headed during the past 2 years?
All right. Great question. Roger Rivard.
You know, the biggest thing I get out on the street is the economics, the economy and jobs. People are struggling, and they've been struggling, and we had a horrible situation with where the state was headed. The business people have uncertainty. They're not hiring. They're sitting on their money. They're sitting on their jobs. They don't know what to do. So that's one of the biggest things. And a lot of times that comes right directly from the women. They are concerned about their husband having a job or their son having a job and making ends meet. They're the ones that have the checkbook many times. They're head of households many times. They've got to figure out how to pay for the gas at $4 a gallon. They've got to figure out how to buy groceries. They're very, very concerned about the economy and the jobs and what's going on. They're very concerned about education. Many of their children maybe have job skills that don't match the job market. They maybe have a degree that doesn't fit anything that they can get a job for. We have to look at technical education as a perfect example of, you know, of there's many businesses in our area, particularly looking for to hire welders and mechanics and engineers and electricians, plumbers, and there's no job skills out there. We have to adjust our education system to fit the needs so that the business community and the education community are on the same page and producing workers that the business community needs and wants.
All right, and Stephen Smith, what about yourself? You've been out on the campaign trail knocking on doors. What do you hear as the biggest concern?
Jobs and fairness, fairness of the carrying the burden. I also would like to, you know, I heard about the technical education, but yet the biggest cut ever, one-third of the technical college budget was cut, and it's, you know, right at the time when we need to retrain workers. It's like running a marathon and shooting yourself in the foot at the start of the race.
Response?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I just met with the president of WITC yesterday morning, in fact, and we talked about this very thing. And I've been working very, very, very diligently with the WITC. I go to all their board meetings, and we talk about, they call it the workforce paradox. You know, why have we got a bunch of businesses looking for employees, but they don't have any employees with the proper skills? And that to me, it's all about priorities, you know. We always tie, you know, Steve likes to tie everything to money, money, money. It's got to be all about money. It's not all about money. It's all about priorities. Maybe there's money being spent on programs and the education system that is not producing the proper degrees and the proper knowledge and proper work skills. We need to refocus that. Yes, money may be an issue, and especially in technical education, I'm all about priorities. We actually have extra money now, and we can take those additional funds. Like I say, we're running a $342 million budget surplus right now. Now we can start to do things that we need to do, and you prioritize. If it has to go to technical education, I'd be the first one to say, let's spend some more money on technical education. It's very, very needed. We're going to put it towards those priors. But if you don't have any money, if you're running a $3.6 billion deficit, if you've got $200 million, $233 million, you owe $58 million a year, if you have all these bills that you can't pay, what can you buy? You don't have any money to spend on education. Now we're going to have it. Now we've got a better economy.
Now, an issue that is huge, absolutely huge in the 75th Assembly District is the explosion of the frac sand mining industry. And in the district, there's towns like Sumner, Sioux Creek, and Arlen that have frac sand mines. And this industry does promise the possibility of, supposedly it's been estimated 2,000 jobs or more. But there are a lot of people with concerns about the environment, infrastructure, local roads, and health concerns. Stephen Smith, I'll ask you first, and I'll go to Roger Rivard after. Is enough being done to regulate this industry, and should the state be more involved?
No, the state shouldn't be more involved in regulating the industry. The controls on the industry would best come from local governments, i.e. the county board and the town boards. What they need is good information. That's where I see there's a lack of good information. Yes, the DNR has some standards, but I don't think the standards they have, they know a lot of scientific things about frac sand. And it's a great opportunity for jobs. We have a mining heritage in our state, and people that own frac sand deposits have a right to sell their minerals, mm-hmm. not at the expense of our health and safety. But I know that if this mining is done the right way, it'll be done in a safe way, and there will be more jobs. Prevention beats cure. You know, one time they dumped taconite tailings in Lake Superior, and then they found out that it was polluting our drinking water. We can't have that happen with frac sand. We have to have good quality air to breathe. You know, there's a lot of oil in our country and a lot of natural gas. We can be energy independent. But in order to achieve that, the companies that extract those minerals need our frac sand. And it's not just for our country. They're going to export frac sand all over the world. It's a great opportunity for our economy.
All right. And Roger Rivard, local governments are beginning to catch up on their knowledge about this burgeoning frac sand industry, and many are doing so through the use of moratoriums. Recently, there was a panel in Eau Claire, and Assembly Majority Leader of the Assembly, Scott Suter, he criticized the use of moratoriums, saying that local governments should use that as a last option and not a first. Do you have issue with companies, in this case, frac sand mines, being held up from creating those jobs while local governments study the potential impacts?
Well, yes and no. You know, when 2 years ago, nobody around here really knew what frac sand was. And when it first came up a couple of years ago, it's like, what, frac sand? Well, then I started to do my research. Of course, that's what you're supposed to do. One of the first calls I made was the DNR. The next call I made was the DOT. I did my research. I studied this. When I talked to the DNR, I said, okay, there's concerns about environment. Do you have the permitting process the DNR has in existence already? He said, we've been regulating that industry for 50, 60 years. You know, we have particulate matter standards. We have water quality standards. We have a permit process that they have to go through that's huge. And now it's been upgraded to the point where already that they have to have reclamation plans and everything as part of the process for opening up a sand mine. Barron County alone already had 65 sand and gravel pits to start with. Mm-hmm. Now, is this an uptick in activity? Absolutely. It's a great uptick in activity. But it's the same thing we've been doing for hundreds of years in Wisconsin, in our part of Wisconsin, because we actually have those minerals. We have the sand. We have the gravel. So the DNR is regulating it. We've got townships. Many of the problems we've got are townships that are completely unzoned. And they did not want to adopt zoning because they didn't want anybody telling them what to do. Well, now all of a sudden, when a frac mine wants to open up in their township, well, now all of a sudden, now we want to control it. They don't have the mechanism to do it. They don't have the zoning adoption. They're trying to create ordinances, and maybe they've got a couple of town board officials that don't want to see frac sand mining, so they want to create an ordinance that will stop it. That's not what town officials are supposed to do. They're supposed to take all the information together and make a decision based on what's best for the people in a township. So all of a sudden, the locals want to take control of the situation but don't really have the expertise to do it. County zoning is in place. The DNR, EPA, all of these have been on board. They've all studied this. They understand the situation and they've been controlling it. And they've got the regulations in place. We need to use those. It's a great thing for northern Wisconsin. I drive right down through New Auburn when I come down here just a few minutes ago. And it's wonderful to see what's happened to that community. The businesses are reopening. Their little cafe is going. The C-Store is under construction right now. They're adding on and putting new tanks in. It's phenomenal. They were going to close a year or so ago. They were just ready to close. It's wonderful to see. I can't tell you how many people come to me and say, boy, I'm driving truck for a frac sand company. I'm working on the construction. My friends have got jobs. It's great for our area. It has to be done environmentally responsible. Like I said, the first thing I did is call the DNR. Okay, what's the deal? And they explained it to me. That's what people need to do is find out what the real information is. Infrastructure, we talked about roads and stuff. I talked to the DOT right away. They said, yep, when we find out where the mines are coming, they tell us what their patterns are going to be, where the trucks are going to be. We do surveys on the roads. And if they need to have improvements in certain turning areas, because that's where most of the damage is, where they turn, mm-hmm. we upgrade those intersections. Many of these frac sand companies are helping the townships with money towards roads. They're rebuilding roads. They're building new roads. Many of these townships are negotiating with these companies and getting monetary returns for that very thing. Property tax values alone are going to double sometimes the revenues that some of these townships are taking in. It's going to be a wonderful thing as long as we do it correctly.
All right. We're going to take our final break here. You're listening to the 75th State Assembly Candidate Forum. On the show, we've got Democrat Stephen Smith of Rice Lake and Republican incumbent Roger Rivard, also of Rice Lake. We've still got a lot of callers on the line. We'll work through some of those. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a wind project in the town of Forest. So stay tuned. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. If you missed part of the program or would like to listen again, you can check out the Westside Archives by going to WPR.org. Scan down the list of programs towards the bottom. You'll find the Westside link. Click on that, and you'll have years' worth of archives and a preview of what's coming up next week as well. And by the way, next week we're going live in Durand, live on location. I guess we're always live, but you'll have a chance to watch us make radio at the Durand High School, and that'll be at 5 p.m. next Thursday. You're listening tonight to the Westside 75th State Assembly Candidate Forum, And we've got Republican incumbent Roger Rivard and Democratic challenger Stephen Smith in the studio. We're going to try to take as many of your calls as possible before the top of the hour. So you can give a call at 800-228-5615. We are full. The phone lines are full right now, but go ahead and check out the Westside Facebook page and drop a line there. Before we go to the phones, I want to ask real quick about this wind farm in the town of Forest. It's a controversial project known as the Highland Wind Farm, and it would be in comprised of, or there would be, it would be composed of 41 500-foot-tall turbines and an electrical substation in the town of Silent. A group of residents have formed an opposition. They've recalled their town supervisors that approved the project. There has been threats of lawsuits. There has been all kinds of drama there. Stephen Smith, with the need for alternative energy sources like wind, do you think the Public Service Commission, which is now considering the application, should they grant it, or should this be a project for another place?
Well, the first thing they should do is listen to the people that are going to be mostly impacted, and it's the local residents. But if a farmer has enough land to put up a wind turbine and he wishes to do so on his land, I don't see where we can infringe on their property rights just because we don't want it in our backyard. And renewable energy is going to provide jobs. I know there's jobs going in eastern Wisconsin where they're making turbine towers. Mm-hmm. I know there's ships that are being built to transport these towers to Europe. Renewable energy sources will provide jobs, and it's part of our policy to get to energy independence for America. And so just to say, gosh, we don't want it because it's close to home, sometimes can be a little disingenuous, but, local control, that's a big thing with me.
Mm-hmm. Roger Rivard, your thoughts on the Highland Wind Project. And also I want to throw in that the town board, there was local control, but the company, after having trouble with the town board that was elected by this opposition group, they canceled the contract. So they increased the size of the project, which then made it a state decision.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. And the local control was lost at that point, unless the PSC makes a different decision. It's all about location. One of the groups that I belong to, American Legislative Exchange Council, I'm on the Energy, Environment, and Agriculture Task Force, and I'm on the Energy Subcommittee. So one of the good things I've been able to do last 2 years is study a lot about energy, environment, agriculture, and particularly energy. I've looked at the maps all across the nation for wind energy and for solar energy. Guess who's not on them? Wisconsin's not on them. Why are we doing it in Wisconsin, in an urban township like Forest that's heavily populated? 94% of the properties in Wisconsin, in that township, are going to be affected by these 500-foot towers. It's an urban town. There's a lot of people that live there. Why are we doing it in Wisconsin where we really don't have proper amount of wind? Because of money. It's all about money. It's all about taxpayer money. The taxpayers are going to have to subsidize all these jobs, whether you create jobs that are subsidized by the taxpayers. Why? How do you think the federal government got $16 trillion in debt? You know, we're going to be subsidizing every one of these things to be built. And then every ounce of energy that comes out of them is going to have to be subsidized also. So the ratepayers are also going to have to subsidize by paying higher rates on their energy bills. Now, if this was such a wonderful deal, private enterprise would jump on this in a minute. But they're not, because it's going to have to be subsidized totally by the taxpayers. So is it something we want to research and look into? Fine. I'll tell you, go out through North Dakota and you see these vast areas where there's nobody living and it's windy. Hey, maybe that's a great place for it. But if there's enough money, these developers will put them in anywhere they want, anywhere they can. Why did they pick Forest? Unzoned townships. That's usually, you pick an area that has no defense. And then when they finally got the defense by changing their town board, then you go to the PSC, enlarge in the system so that you can jump into this mega system. And now it's up to the PSC. So you've lost that local control. The people in the town of Forest are going to pay the penalty for this, and the taxpayers are going to pay the subsidy for this. I just don't think it's a great idea.
Back to the phones we go, and we'll go to Barbara in Rice Lake. Barbara's been on the line for some time, so we appreciate her staying with us. You're on the air, Barbara, and what's your question or comment?
Yes, my question is for Steve Smith, and I would like to know, would you have voted for the state budget? Why or why not?
All right, and Steve Smith.
I probably would not have voted for the state budget as it went because I don't think it did well for the people of the 75th district. We came out behind the rest of the state. Some of our transportation funds projects have been put on hold while projects in southeastern Wisconsin have been given a faster track. So spending on our roads is going to happen on roads down by Milwaukee. The $300 million to voucher schools without accountability in Milwaukee was in that. I would have had to vote no.
All right, and I'll ask a follow-up type question for Roger Rivard. You obviously voted for the budget.
Yes.
And was there anything in there that you wished wouldn't have been included since it's an omnibus kind of a thing? It's a straight up or down vote.
Well, there was a lot of discussion. Of course, it's a humongous, you know, bill, and it's a humongous pile of papers. And there's things in there, of course, that, you know, you just cannot agree with everything in there. One of the things that we did do, and I made it very clear when I went down there, I'm not going to vote for things. We took a lot of policy out of it. We got as much policy out of there as possible. I said, I do not want to vote on policy in a budget bill. If it's about budget, I want to vote on budget. You know, can we agree on every penny that's in the budget? No. But at least we didn't have to vote on a bunch of policy and different things like that. So they kept it as clean as possible. We had a terrible, and I can go over the numbers again, but it takes too much time. We knew what we were up against. We had to come up with a budget to fix that. And we did that. Was it easy? Absolutely not. One of the biggest things, and Steve talked about it, is protecting the Northwoods. That's one of the biggest reasons I ran. I want to protect the Northwoods. I want to make sure that the revenues that are generated up here stay up here. One of the things I talked about at the Towns Association last night up in Spooner, the Washburn Towns Association, the money is going to be generated in this area from frac sand mining for the fuel tax. Huge amounts of it, because these diesel trucks at $4.29 a gallon are burning a lot of fuel, mm-hmm. and 50-some cents of that goes to the state for taxes. I want to make sure that stays up in Wisconsin, up in northern Wisconsin, where it's generated. So I've already got my staff working on some legislation to say that when the funds are generated in northern Wisconsin, the funds get to stay in northern Wisconsin. Towns Association is concerned about revenue sharing for road aids, too. Bigger and bigger chunks are going to the southeastern part of the state. We need to balance that back and get larger chunks back to the northern part of the state where the actual miles are driven.
All right. Now, we've got about 5 minutes left, and I'm going to ask a question that probably could take up hours and hours. But talking about Act 10 and the fact that, you know, that Act 10 is, of course, the law that limits collective bargaining abilities for some public employees. Recently was declared unconstitutional by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Juan Colas. And in his ruling, he says that the law creates two classes of public employees because fire and police were exempted, and therefore it's unconstitutional. Roger Rivard, if this thing, if his ruling survives the appeals process, which who knows if it will, but if it does, that was, would the state legislature then have to restrict the ability for collective bargaining for public police and fire then to make it constitutional, or would it just go away?
No, I think we would have to look at bringing both classes together. When this came up originally with Act 10, I was not agreeable to separating the police and fire. I did not agree with that, and I told Scott Walker that myself. I was a fireman for 20-some years in Rice Lake. I was a volunteer fireman. I understand firemen. I don't understand policemen because I was never one of those, but I was a fireman. When that fire whistle goes off, you go. Mm-hmm. And what Scott Walker told me, he says, my number one concern is public safety. That's the number one job of the state is public safety. I feel that no matter what happens, we have to have police and fire on the job. So we do not want them walking off the job and you know, there's a fire in a nursing home and no firemen show up. I didn't feel that same way. I said, no, Scott, I know that the police and fire people in this state will stay on the job. And they'll do their job because they're dedicated people. I was one of them for a long time. We did not agree on that. But they went the other way and voted to make two separate classes. I was not agreeable to that. I don't think we should have done that.
All right, Stephen Smith, what are your thoughts on this?
But you did vote for Act 10.
Yes.
Okay. And you know, Roger, I just heard you say you knew it was wrong. And that's my proof that it's wrong to say snowplow drivers and teachers and other public employees are different than police and firemen. And I really feel that it was a rush to crush employee unions that backed the political opponents of the party that was in control versus police and firemen that seemed to back the party that was in control. It was a way to punish your enemies and help your friends. And now the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin are going to pay the price, pick up the tab. And we're gonna end up spending money that for law, you know, legal fees, and correcting things that didn't happen, you know, correcting things that happened in Act 10 that are going to get ruled, you know, unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. We get to pick up the tab.
That's a good analogy. How could we, the taxpayers, be picking up the tab when we've saved over $1 billion already to the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin? We saved $1 billion. Now, if Act 10 happened to be reversed for any reason, what are the school districts, what are the municipalities, what are the townships, what are the villages, what are they going to do? Now, they've got some control over their employees right now and some control over their budgets. They finally got a little bit of control. Steve, you're a businessman. I'm a businessman. We understand budgeting. If you were faced with the issues that the state of Wisconsin was faced in your business and you had to cut back with on some of your employees, and I'm sure you've had this discussion with your co-owner, would you have to do that? Yeah, you would. We are the stewards of the taxpayers' money. We have to do what we have to do to take care of be the stewards of the taxpayers' money.
Right.
See, right. So. But you know, if Act 10 gets rolled back and things have to be reinstated and money has to be paid, it's going to come out of our pockets. And this is, you know, I really think if a bipartisan agreement would have been made that people agreed to, this probably wouldn't be happening now. But, you know, it's mere conjecture, and we'll never know. But I do know at the end of the day, we're going to pick up the tab and have to pay for it, because that's how we do it in Wisconsin.
All right. I wish we had more time to continue this discussion, but that is our time. I'd like to thank you both for being part of the forum. Democrat Stephen Smith of Rice Lake and Republican incumbent Roger Rivard, also of Rice Lake. Thank you both so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich, for having us.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Mort Cypress for handling on-air production, Courtney Holbrook and Henry Lippold for help with production, Hannah Lagerman for promotions, and Molly O'Hearn, Grace Fair, and Dean Kallenbeck for keeping us on the rails. Next week, join us in person for a live on-location broadcast for the 93rd State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio's Westside. You can join us in person or listen in on the radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Until next week, thanks. We'll chat again.